Hello.
Hi.
We're back.
Sorry about that.
So it's episode 2 of Behind the Uniform, and this week we're going to talk a bit more about the family life, the juggle.
Motherland.
The
endless juggle, what life's like as mothers, as wives.
Fiancés, for some of us that are not married. Thank you. I'm still waiting for that invitation.
How many years have you been engaged?
Quite a while. We'll talk about it. He's already in the doghouse, literally, every day. Well, far too busy for a marriage.
Yes, that is true. When would you fit that in?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, of course. And that's what we're going to be talking about, is how we fit everything in. And I know that a lot of people will be able to relate to that life, the juggle, doing everything, wanting to achieve everything. Can we be businesswomen? Can we be mothers? Can we have it all?
Yeah.
That is the question.
I think you can have it all, but not always as great as you would like
maybe,
it to be.
Maybe.
At the same time, I find that I wear different hats on different days. And some days I think I'm smashing life as a mum.
Yeah.
And then some days I'm smashing life as my business, but I'm not such a great mum, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always a good mum, but you know what I mean.
Something's got to give.
Something has to give.
Yeah, so it's, can we have it all? Maybe we can, but don't think that anything comes without compromise,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and without sacrifice. Or so I think in this day and age, I think we're very much, as women, I think we're very much sold the idea that we definitely can have it all. And
it's quite competitive as well.
In some ways I am in favor of that narrative. You know, we've moved on a lot, haven't we, in terms of what women can achieve in life and the expectations of women. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, is only a positive thing. But I think there are always going to be consequences to every decision that you make. And it's hard sometimes, because I can't lie, as a woman living, you know, in this sort of era that we're in now, I do feel a pressure. I feel a pressure to
achieve,
mm-hmm. be a wonderful mother, be a very successful person in my chosen career, be, you know, giving and nurturing and be, I don't know.
Stable life.
Yeah. And
in an unstable world, or the world that we've chosen can be unstable with our jobs.
It's so hard, because we want so badly to succeed at everything we do. And I think that's just a general pressure that's put on everybody these days. And I mean, that's a whole other podcast probably, talking about sort of that the consequences of that pressure that's put on everybody to succeed at everything, and the sort of fakery around the narrative that we sell on social media, that everything is so wonderful, and that competitive nature creeps in, doesn't it? Because of that,
unfortunately we
can't do anything about the sort of human condition, and the fact that we live in an era now where you're sort of surrounded by this idea of achieving
the idealism
things,
that everything's perfect and wonderful and everybody is achieving everything, which then makes you want to achieve more. So you're almost in an unrealistic sort of universe, because it is unrealistic
and it's not real.
And everything that people put out on social media isn't real, but your brain doesn't tell you that. You look at that and think, well, they're doing amazingly well. Maybe I need to do better. And then you're on this constant competitive nature, not in a nasty way, but you're competing against yourself, really. You want to achieve more because you see other people. Why can't they doing that? They seem to have it all.
Mm. Yeah. And I think it is part of, you know, our social discourse now. It's part of the way we live our lives. And again, it's another podcast here, just in this one sentence, but I'm so glad that I actually grew up without the internet. I feel quite fortunate in a way to have had my childhood without the internet and without social media. Mm-hmm. And I worry about my own children in relation to that and the future. Obviously, they're very young at the moment, but I see how hard that must be for parents of teenagers, or, you know, I do see the huge challenges ahead when it comes to things like social media.
Definitely.
But
and where do you stand on social media for your children in the future? Like, is there an age limit? You and Anna, like, with your son, but it's so hard.
The difficulty is, once all their friends start doing it, Again, pressure.
And you feel mean.
That you have, you know, do you have to conform? And, yeah, it's very difficult. You just have to hope that they have the morals instilled in them from the beginning to be sensible
make
enough.
Sense, make
to,
sensible
to,
choices.
Yeah, yeah, to make the,
sensible
the
choices.
Most appropriate choices.
I think you can't change the way we are as a time and, you know, we're advanced in technology. I don't think you can change. And I think it's important that you give your children those tools because at the end of the day, that's where we are in society. But I think it's giving them the education right from the start. And I, with Grayson and, you know, with my children, I am 100% going to be preempting the fact that I don't want them to have social media because I don't think it's good for mental health because of the what we've just spoke about, the unrealistic information that's been put out that you should achieve to look like this, you should be achieving that.
Is it realistic to think that, you know, your child in the future won't have a social media presence?
No, not definitely not. I don't think it's realistic, but I think I am going to hold off as long as I physically can.
Yes.
And I think that might come with some challenges, but I think if I'm now, I'm preempting that, I'm going to be educating Grayson in that and to know that, you know, that's not going to happen for a long period until I feel comfortable and safe. And then obviously it's then educating him on what is going to be putting out there. And things might change. Like, this is a few, Grayson's only one. I'm already getting him an iPhone.
I think it's
a social media account.
But do you know that we're in such a situation with social media that even though my children are 1 and 4, I think about it already.
Yeah, that you need to.
Which, you know, is worrying in itself, really. But it is part of the world we live in. Mm. And unfortunately, we can't really ignore it. Mm-hmm. No, that's
it. You can't wrap them up, but it's scary.
It is scary. I don't really know how we got onto this subject. The reason I was mentioning things like that was just this idea that in this day and age, women are told that you can have it all as a woman now. Mm. You can have the glittering business empire, the success, you could have the family. And I wonder what the reality of that narrative is. So, mm-hmm. for example, you know, Katie, you have really worked hard to build your business and your career, and you probably put off starting your family mm-hmm. until you were at the point where you felt that you were secure and comfortable and ready. But of course, making that decision did have a big consequence for you, mm-hmm. and you ended up in a situation that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah, it's starting a family, I did put it off. I was sort of fooling myself. I mean, I'm 45. Thank you. I know. Thank you very much. I'm 45, but I definitely feel 35. Like, aside from how I might look, I know. Thank you. I actually feel in my heart and my head 35. There is no question. I think there's been a mix up at my dates. But so I think that's played a contributing factor as well. But definitely my career. And I could see straight away, for me, I felt it was important for me to fulfill myself as a person and to put the foundations in place for me and my family, because I know how hard work it is to run a business, to get things off the ground. I'm so lucky that I have Stuart, who runs the business with me. He's, you know, he's a director within the company. We're both, you know, we work the same. Without that, I wouldn't have that. We've made a choice to build this empire. And then with that then comes, we're both sharing the responsibility of Grayson, which means we can do a little bit more. But yeah, I definitely wouldn't have, I wouldn't be where I am now if I'd have made the decision to have a family earlier. I don't believe anyway. Mm. Some people might differ, but I just don't believe I would.
It's so hard, isn't it? Because there are so many advantages, I think, to having children young, physically. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you probably have a lot more energy and, you know, maybe when you start to get a little bit more time back for yourself, you know, you're young enough, maybe then you have this window of opportunity to maybe fulfill some of your earlier ambitions. So there are different ways to come at it, I suppose.
Definitely.
But for us, we're really wanting to have this talk today because over the last few years, a lot of the darlings have become mums. Mm. And we've all got our own individual stories and experiences, and it really does change the landscape. And I think as three sort of self-employed, well, obviously you run your own business, Katie, but, you know, we're all self-employed performers and singers, and, you know, we've had quite, I suppose, varied careers in performance. I know you've done quite a few sort of touring jobs mm-hmm. internationally. You've been on cruises. Like I've been, you know, I've worked away a lot as well.
Yeah.
You know, I've had whole years away from home working on ships and things. And you know, so of course, starting a family massively shifts the landscape in terms of your work.
Yeah, it changes how you can work.
It changes
and
everything.
Where you can work.
Yes, that's of course. So I think in some ways, in this line of work, you often see women starting a family a little bit later.
Mm. So regarding your situation and your children, multiple, you've got two amazing children, beautiful. How have you found that then, sort of the transition for you personally?
So I have to say, actually going from one child to two was more of a shock. You know, I thought, okay, I've made the big lifestyle change already by becoming a mum. Mm-hmm.
What's one more?
Yeah. And yeah, so I'm so lucky, and I can't say enough how lucky I feel to have such a supportive family around me on both sides. You know, I'm able to do what I do with the Dido Darlings because I've got two sets of wonderful grandparents on my side and my husband Chris's side, who help us so much. Because obviously Chris has a full-time job, mm-hmm. and as you know, it's the hours that we work and the sporadic nature of this job and the sort of feast or famine nature of it as well. So we can go through times that are extremely busy when I'm
May.
Like, yeah. Yeah, May and June.
May.
Where we might be, you know, needed on events and for performances and shows, mm-hmm. you know, sort of 6 days out of mm-hmm. seven. Mm-hmm. And really, to make that work, you know, you need supportive people and people who
are... A village.
Yeah, a village.
You need a village.
Quite. And of course, there are the more conventional childcare options like playgroups and nursery settings. But of course, they don't always work with this job that we do. Because the hours aren't right. Because we're out late at night. We're out over the weekends. So without having those people in my life who are there to help me, especially now with two, there's no way I'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely no way. And of course, Chris helps as well where he can. And he tries to
shuffle work around.
Yeah, and be as flexible as he possibly can within the constraints of having a full-time job, you know. So
quite a high profile full-time
job. Yeah, so
it is
a juggle. And I have to say, in, you know, it is the most wonderful thing of my life. Becoming a mum, it's the joy of my life, as you know, and I'm sure many of our listeners will know. But in terms of, you know, the landscape shifting in terms of what you're able to do career-wise, work-wise, I think it's a seismic shift in what you're able to do.
Yeah.
And it's just a case of, I suppose, getting used to that
and
new
landscape.
And
accepting it yourself as a, like you say, as a career person, as someone that wants to achieve, as a talented woman that's got all these talents and this enthusiasm for your job, it is hard. Mm. That comes back to can we have it all, the balance and the juggle.
And I think as well, like, I've been very dedicated to trying to keep this career going for as long as possible and, you know, with that in mind, as a self-employed person, you say yes to almost everything.
Everything.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, it's tricky. I can make it work. I'll be there. I'll do it. And then, of course, you that's not the top of the list anymore.
It's not always that easy when
it's
you have
not
children,
always that easy.
It?
So it's not always, you know, so it's, I will, you know, now it's, I'll get back to you. Give me, you know, give me 24 hours and let me see if I can actually...
I've noticed that actually happening. Yeah. It used to be yes, now it's I'll get back to you. Okay, that explains why.
Yeah.
Joking.
I still have the same drive and passion for, you know, the D-Day Darlings, but it is more challenging to, you know, fulfil all of the commitments. But
I think, though, the fact that the nature of the job and what it is, the fact that we're all friends and we support each other, like, obviously I run the business and I'm the one that's like, you need to be there. And I'm like, it's quite difficult sometimes to find, how I not pitch myself with you girls, because I know that we're good friends, almost best friends, you know, but it's like I am running a business and I do need to make those decisions. But I think
you're in a difficult position.
Difficult position to know. Yeah. I know how to be now because I have a team around me and my friends around me that will respect that 100%. When I'm not bossy, but I have to make those firm decisions.
She's very bossy, but it's okay. We I'm love
not that
her.
Bad. I'm not that bad. There's worse.
But without that, we don't get there. So I have to be like that. And sometimes I actually hate doing it.
Yes.
And
someone has to steer the ship, though, don't they? And yeah. You have to have that direction and that drive and that focus. And ultimately, you are getting the opportunities for all of us
that's
as a collective.
Bloody thing.
Definitely. I think it's actually a really hard balance to strike for you because you are
naturally very personable.
Yeah, and I feel like and you wear your heart on your sleeve and you like to be
a friend.
Yeah,
and
I think that's important. Yeah.
Well, that's what makes it fun.
Exactly.
That's why we do a job that doesn't feel like a job.
And you are a naturally fun person.
Yeah. Oh, tell of. I don't think Stuart would agree with that.
The comedy, the gigs really? Where the comedy turn makes an appearance.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, bless you, bit of comedy, everybody loves a bit of comedy, but what I'm saying is I think having the nature of what we do and the balance that we have and the understanding of each other makes it easier or a little easier to be able to juggle, to want the career, have those career moments, but also stay at home. And we can't do everything.
No.
And we support each other. Mm. We try and do everything. Yes. And if we can't, we understand. And I understand, unless it's massive. And then I'm like, absolutely not. You have to be there. Get one of those glowing grandparents to look after those two beautiful children and be there. But yes. Emily's always there. So that's absolutely fine. But the same with you, Alana. Mm. And gosh, Alana is always there.
Yes.
She will move heaven and earth to be there around being a mum, around being a career woman and a businesswoman, running your own businesses, your own training academy, you know, amazing. And you have one child, beautiful Arthur, who's so good looking, by the way. What a cutie. He's always been a supermodel from birth.
He's going to break so many hearts.
He's breaking mine. He broke mine in 6 months.
No, I actually look at him on a daily basis and we have this little phrase between us where I look at him and I go, oh, you just break my heart. And he never used to understand what break my heart meant, but now he kind of gets it because obviously I've said it to him so many times.
He's
now
he gets it. Mom.
And now he'll say to me, Mummy, am I breaking your heart? And I'm like, melt me.
You're so lucky to have Arthur. What a gorgeous child. And I know obviously you've been married to Paul's like your childhood sweetheart, isn't he?
We got together when I was 18 and I'm 36 now, so that's 18 years.
Like me and Stuart have been together for 18 years.
Yeah,
I didn't, that feels weird because we didn't meet till I was I'm not very good at maths.
Better get back to school.
Anyway, on to the next.
But can you believe we've been married for 7 years in July?
That's weird.
So crazy, isn't
it?
Where does the time go?
It just feels like 6 months.
It's the juggle is real. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and the pressure to have a family and maybe more children as well. It's you know.
I think generally, like my career changed a lot when I got married and then had Arthur soon after, because like Emily said earlier, I was touring around, I was doing lots of jobs internationally in different countries and on cruises. And then, you know, that moment in your life comes and life changes and you have to adapt. And actually, the D-Day Darlings came at the perfect moment for me. It's sort of like when the planets align. And I've been so grateful of that ever since, because I've been able to fulfil my passions and my dreams of singing and performing as part of the D-Day Darlings.
With high-profile moments.
And getting to do the most amazing theatres, TV appearances, you know, just far more than I ever imagined would be in my life, you know. It is a juggle finding constant childcare. And as much as you want your career to be amazing, you also want to be an amazing mom.
Yeah.
So it's a very fine balancing act. Mm-hmm. But similar to Emily, I have a really good support network and a very understanding husband who is used to me going, I'm leaving at 6 a.m, bye.
Yeah, Paul's amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
I mean, all our husbands are, I think we're so lucky, all of us, to have husbands, partners, boyfriends that are understanding of what we do and supportive. I think as well, it wouldn't really work if we didn't have that.
It's all part
of the support network, isn't it? We're a team, like even including. We need to do something with our husbands. We need to
get them on the podcast.
Sorry, it's like
I'll get Chris to get his radio voice
loose
on.
Loose women's answer to loose men.
Yes.
Oh, the D-Day Derricks.
The D-Day Derricks.
Or the D-Day Del boys in my case.
The D-Day dudes.
The D-Day dudes. Mm. Nice one. So, you know, any more children on the pipeline, Alana, do you think?
Well, this is a story in itself because a year or so ago, or maybe more now, after we had Arthur, Paul wanted another child. And I was quite happy with Arthur because my life, my business.
She got a figure back.
It's so, it's so busy. And then, you know, Paul really wanted to have a child. And I was like, no, we can't fit it in. There's just, you know, there isn't the time. So we sort of put that idea aside. And yeah, then we sort of decided that Arthur was it for us. But now it's kind of gone the other way. And now I think that I might like another one.
Oh, my God. Really?
Exclusive, guys.
Wow, that's a turn.
Yeah, exclusive. So, but now hang on. Paul's gone the other way.
Does Paul know, or is he learning this through the podcast?
Well, Paul's sort of saying, like, it's now or never, because, he's 41 now, and he's saying, you know, it's now or never. Make a decision. So, it's up in the air, shall we say.
Quite literally.
But never say never.
Sorry, I just felt we needed to get a little bit of that in there.
Classic.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Oh, well, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
God, well, do you know what? Arthur's amazing. Mm. If you can have another one. It's like, like we just said, when Emily said, you know, we're mothers, and I can't even tell you the gulp it gave me, because it's like, I still sit here now, absolutely, like, completely ecstatic that I have a baby.
Yeah.
Because there's for so long it was looking doubtful, like 100%, you know. And as soon as you said that, I had a lump and I really felt a deep emotion. And I've been sitting there through this conversation with a deep emotion in there. It's still so rooted within me. And I can't believe how blessed I am, really, to have. I literally can't believe it. I still can't believe I have a baby. And I suppose it gives you a deeper appreciation. I'm not saying we don't all love and appreciate our children, 100%. I just, for me, I can't stop looking at him. I can't stop touching him. And I don't mind when he wakes me up in the night. I'm shattered, but I don't mind, because it's like I'd much rather be woken up in the night than be woken up in the night of thoughts of not having a child, which I've done that for many years.
I mean, I imagine a lot of people who listen to this podcast will know a little bit about your history, but maybe for those who don't, you can.
So I started to try again the career, the D-Day darlings, the life, you know, the building up the foundations of my empire, everything that I want to achieve was put in place. And then when I was about 38, which I suppose is considered geriatric in terms of having a baby. I knew I wanted to start trying for a baby, and I was so excited. And I remember having a conversation with Emily, because I'm like quick in life. I think of an idea, I get stuff done, I make it happen, I don't faff about. I said to Emily, because I've just got that mind, I just quick. And I remember having a conversation with Emily saying, I'm going to start trying for a baby. And she was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, so excited. And I said, you know what, I think I'm going to be one of those people that gets pregnant straight away, you know, like really quick. You know what it's like. And she was like, yeah. I mean, why not? People do. And it happens.
Yeah. And I think as well, you had probably some confidence because you've got three sisters who've all had children.
Yeah. All my sisters have had children. Mum's had four children.
Yes.
It's like, you know, we've got a very fertile family and there's no reason to believe why that won't happen to me. And all good. Start trying for a baby. And, you know, you think, wham, bam, thank you, mum, is that it? But, you know, very quickly realised 6 months, 7 months on. And I think when you get to my age, when you're trying for 6 to 7 months, you know, I was sort of approaching my 40s, you start to think something might be wrong now. Or maybe deal with it quicker because time's not on your side. So I remember organising a meeting and it was, yeah, we had tests and there was no reason to suggest why I wouldn't get pregnant. There's nothing particularly wrong with me other than I think age and, I don't know, situation or we don't know. It's unexplained infertility. So I embarked on the IVF route, which was hard to get your head around because, you know, people were getting pregnant around you naturally. I mean, why can't I? What's wrong with me as a woman? It opens up all sorts of insecurities. And I remember this being one of the hardest things I've ever been through. You know, I've been on this planet for a few years and I've never experienced anything like this. The feeling, the triggers, the isolation that it can make you feel, the sadness, you know, the frustration, you know. So
I think as well, if you don't mind my saying, like, once you'd embarked upon this journey, I think it's important as well to mention that over these like intervening years, obviously you're still very busy with work and everything, and a lot of the people who you were with every day were getting pregnant.
Yeah.
And it was almost like there was a bit of a chain reaction, you know.
It's bittersweet.
Somebody would get pregnant, then the next girl would say, oh, I'm pregnant. The next girl would say, I'm pregnant.
Many of us were pregnant within very quick succession.
Because we're in the age, bracket, yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see how, because you were really amazing, Katie, because you were so supportive to everybody, but I could see how hard that must have been.
Yeah. God, I remember the dressing room, it was bumps galore at one point. Yeah. It was like, I think I was like two or three rounds in, had a miscarriage, you know, and failed rounds of IVF. Definitely no baby. And I just remember bumps galore in the dressing room. Just, I think there was you, there was Nicola, and there was Jessica.
Yeah, we were all pregnant
all
at the
pregnant
same time.
At the same time, slightly different varying times. But of course, the excitement, you know, and I'm excited for you because you're my friends. I love you all. So I am so pleased for you. But the way that that made me feel as a woman, seeing three bumps, glorious bumps all around me, all I wanted was a bump. I wanted to be that big and, you know, in the
billowing dress.
Yeah, I wanted the maternity, you know, and that was really, really hard. But again, it's like it's bittersweet because you are so pleased for your friends, and that's weird. It's like a juxtaposition, you know. You're so happy, but then you're
but
so
I think,
sad at
you
the
know,
same time.
It's totally understandable for you to feel sad as well, you know, and feel maybe you can't face that today. Mm. You know, I think that's understandable.
Yeah, it's having to face it though as well. It's like you don't really get a choice. It's like,
no.
And also as well, I don't want to be that person that. I've had to say no to a few things, baby showers, you know, a few things that I didn't need to attend that was going to be a trigger.
I think as well, particularly around difficult times.
Around difficult times, like 2020, I had an absolute huge, huge meltdown, if that's the word, an absolute crisis point, years and years of grief. And the realisation, during COVID, actually, the world stopped turning. Mm. I was stopped being distracted by, you know,
yeah,
the no, wonderful...
Nothing yeah, to take your mind off it
with your thoughts.
Yeah,
you?
I was completely on my own. Not on my own. Well, pretty much. We were on our own at points because we couldn't see people. So I guess I lost a support network as well, like a physical support network. Obviously, Stuart helped me and Caitlin helped me, but I missed my friends, you know. Yeah. I missed that.
And probably, crucially, you lost the main distraction of performing it with the D-Day Darlings.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's it.
Touring and performing and that lovely connection that you get with the audience, that, you know, it is a wonderful distraction if you are going through something difficult.
Yeah.
I think
it's quite cathartic as well, what we do. It's cathartic. Mm. It's emotional and it's, you know, you can connect for different reasons. It has a deeper meaning. These songs are designed for what we're seeing, how the era that we're dedicating to is a dark time. So it's my dark time. It's my war. And that music helped me through, you know.
It can take you somewhere else.
Somewhere else, yeah.
As well, you know, so...
The message in there is, it can mean different things. You're right. So I think that breakdown and that emotional, absolute minefield that I went through, you know, round after round, miscarriage, ectopic pregnancy, you know, the joy of being pregnant, you know, and spending time with my friends and being, and then them celebrating me being pregnant, you know, you guys. And that felt amazing. It was my turn now. I was pregnant. And then to lose that, I mean, it was like being dropped from a height that was just, not lost the plot, but I suffered major grief.
Yeah. Went down to a
low
dark
place,
hole.
Low place. And I felt so, it was basically, I just felt trapped. We were trapped inside COVID, just looking out and feeling so alone.
Yes.
So alone. And just needing something to, I needed a baby. I needed a baby.
And I suppose, however you managed to distract yourself from that need and that yearning, it's never going to go.
It doesn't go, and you can't accept it. And people say to you, well, maybe you're not meant to have a baby, or, but my heart is not telling me that. My maternal instinct is saying I am meant to be a mom. I want to be a mom. You know, whether I will be a mom is questionable, but, you know, that's what's in my heart. That's what I want. And, you know, people mean well. People do mean well, but it can be, you need support, but I think the best thing that you can do in that situation is listen. It's just listen to how they feel, and if that's how they feel, then that is how they feel, and sort of trying to give them positive, strong, well, you'll be okay, you can carry on, well, it wasn't meant to be, or you'll have another one, or, you know,
you have another go.
Think of it in this way. You can't. It's your loss. It's your. Whether it's just a failed round at IVF, whether it's just the fact you haven't got a baby and you've been trying naturally, or whether you've had a miscarriage, it's a loss. If you're not where you want to be, it's a loss. However, you know, deep, everybody is different.
Yeah. I really feel, honestly, that I know so much more now. You know, I can't put myself in your shoes, but because we are so close and we spend so much time together, I feel like I do have some level of appreciation and understanding of what this journey is.
Definitely. How even 100%
even
agree.
Yeah, even the logistics of it. How does it actually work?
Yeah,
you know what? You know, things like taking the drugs for 3 months, preparing your body, what you have to go through, and of course, the actual final stage of your treatment, which has obviously been very successful, and how that was almost like an education for me. Mm-hmm. The incredible things that can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you can fill them in more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've not spoken about this. During 2020, when I had my initial huge grief and my meltdown, as it were, I decided to do something with all that. I like to turn a negative into a positive in anything I do, and I wanted to do something with this journey, with what I'd learned. Like Emily said, like, she's learned so much through my journey. I wanted to share that with so many people, and also as well, it was cathartic for me to do that, to get my thoughts and feelings down. There was nothing going on with COVID. I had the time. I wanted to document it to help me, and then to reach out to other women, because I know how lonely and isolating it can make you feel. In a very supportive world, when I've got so many people around me, you can feel completely on your own. Completely on your own. There's no question. And I wanted to do a podcast, so I did. I did a 3 or 4 part episode podcast, Keep Smiling Through, after my lovely Dame Vera, because that's what you'll have seen of me, smiling all through the D-Day Darlings, Britain's Got Talent, all over the TV, you know, doing lots of different things on shows. But deep down underneath, there is been a sadness for a long time that I've had to cope with. But we've kept smiling, and that's, I think, through the support of my friends. So I documented that. And that then, a couple of rounds later of IVF tries, failed. I decided to go on to the next stage, which is, I haven't documented this stage yet on my podcast, but I am going to. I'm going to do an insight into this next procedure. Now, no one knows this yet. This is completely news. But I had an egg donor. And to come to that realization of having to do that was hard. It's something I wanted to avoid for a long time. My fertility doctor was dripping it in there throughout my years and years of trying and all my IVF tries and thousands of pounds up in the air. He was saying, we will continue as long as you want, but if you want to have a child sooner rather than later, I strongly recommend egg donor. Now, after, you know, a long time, I decided to get my head around it slowly after my last failed round of IVF. I discussed it with Stuart and I got some information on it and I had some therapy for it to sort of understand it and work through my sadness and my feelings of the sadness of not having my own biological child, because obviously this egg is donated from another woman. And so biologically, it is her child. Grayson is not my biological child. I don't know this person. It's all anonymous. And there's a ways of making it anonymous, which is what I wanted for me to be able to cope with doing this. There's no way I could know this person, that she would be Grayson's biological mother in a way. He's mine. I'm his mum. I grew him. And there's no way I want that initial connection for all those reasons. Otherwise, I couldn't have done it. So for me to make that decision, as soon as I got my head around it, I knew it was the right step for me. But even until I had the egg, so the embryo transfer, so I flew out to Cyprus. It was all done through a clinic in Leeds, the same clinic that was doing my normal IVF. It was IVF using egg donor, and I flew out to Cyprus because there it is anonymous and you don't need to know who the person is, and it's wonderful and it's amazing clinic. And I had an egg donor, but even up to the embryo transfer, I remember feeling, I'm having another woman's egg put inside me. It was just still a bit weird, but I knew I had to do it because it was my only hope. And then once I'd had the procedure done and the embryo was in, and I, got pregnant. Oh my God. Like I got pregnant. I could not believe it. Like, to do a positive pregnancy test and to really feel that this was going to work this time. I had this weird premonition the night of my pregnancy test of, I saw a little boy's face, very fair face. I heard a baby's cry from the nursery that Grayson is now in. And I could see positive, positive, positive. This is a few hours before I actually did my test. This is what happened. And I went in the bathroom and I did the test and it was positive. And I will always trust my instincts now and my gut. Always, 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 because I can see Grayson in that image that I saw. I can see Grayson. And to then grow Grayson in me straight, you know, as soon as I felt him grow, as soon as I could see my tummy expanding, I knew that Grayson was mine. Clearly, no doubt, biologically, or not biologically, he's mine. And I tell you something, it's been the best decision that I ever made. And I hope will give hope to a lot of people like me, who formed a career, who's perhaps left it too late. You know, the odds of IVF using egg donor is way higher. Mm. You know, for normal IVF of my age, you know, I'm not 100% sure of the absolute definitive, but it's less than 15%, almost like 12%. For IVF using egg donor, it's sort of 85, 87%. And really, you know, you need to be fit and healthy. You need a good womb lining that's thick. And they give you medication to thicken your womb lining. But that's really what you need, is a good quality womb lining. And if you have that, you're good to go. And it's obviously worked because I have Grayson. You know, it's not guaranteed, but it's a much higher chance than normal IVF. Mm. So what a success story, you know.
It's amazing. And I suppose then, obviously, you're growing a baby inside you, so the baby will take on your, like...
Epigenetics.
Epigenetics.
Oh, yeah. Like we were saying, like, Grayson is so going to be like me. He's always behind the scenes. He's always with us on the road. He knows all the music. If he wasn't inside me and he didn't grow inside me and he wasn't my child, he grew up in, I don't know, we were saying Princess Kate and William, he'd end up like them, you know, attending very posh affairs.
Doing the boat race.
Exactly. he'd be very regal, whereas he's not going to be regal with me, love.
But does he not take on some of your biology as well? Take your bloods and things?
It takes your blood, yeah, I suppose. So there's a certain element of that. It takes your blood. So yes, in that way. But how I nurture Grayson will be how he will end up, as you know. But biologically, he's not my child. But I've got my head around that. I think I still work through it because I still have therapy for all my journey, for where I am now in life. I just believe in therapy to cope with everything, you know, past and present. And I still do work through it now. But Grayson is my child. I'm his mum. He clings to me. He wants me. He looks at me. He's in love with me. And that's it. Mm.
And I suppose if you widen that out, you know, I'm just thinking about other people and other experiences. I suppose, you know, it's the whole thing about, you know, being a mum or being a dad isn't really about biology.
No.
You know, because you can be, you can nurture somebody. You know, you might have a situation where, obviously, of course, there's adopted children and
step-parents.
Mm-hmm. And
mothers and fathers come in all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, grandparents, caring people that come into a child's life and become the most important
parental figure. Yeah, that's it.
And, you know, I get goosebumps when I think about it because I actually think it's the most incredible thing because really it's just all about, it's love, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
It's love.
That's the only important thing. Yeah. That's the only thing.
That is perfect. Mm. That is so true. It is the only important thing. And this opportunity, it's just given me so much hope, which I really want to share with as many people as I can because I'm so proud of it. Like, I'm not ashamed of what I've done in any way. I don't want Grayson to be ashamed of it. I'm going to be really open with him. I've got books, children's books about egg donation and how the little pea became me. I've got a book called How the Pea Became Me. And when he's on, you know, as soon as he can, I'm going to let him know about that, you know. And I want him to be proud of how he's here, you know. And I will be sharing more detailed information about how the process works, maybe a little bit financially, how much it costs and, you know, how it, you know, information around the medication and the whole process. I want to give hope, particularly to women like me that focused on career or that have struggled, that have been trying for years. Hope is not lost and there are ways and means. Hopefully it can help lots of people. Yeah. So that's going to be something that I will share through my own podcast, Keep Smiling, through another episode that I'll be recording over the coming months. But we hope that it's not been a Debbie Downer.
Too heavy.
We did say we were going to be bearing all, stripped down to the bare basics. But we're positive people and we take the positives out of the negatives. And I think that's really important. And
We
hope that everything from the juggle to life, to how many children you should have, can we have it all, the balancing work and children and fulfilling yourselves as a person and as a career, we hope that that's relatable to so many people.
And I think sharing that with everybody, because you are an open book, and I think it's just wonderful because there will be people listening who can relate to what you've been through. Yeah. There might be people listening who are interested in maybe the idea of using an egg donor, but you don't really know much about it.
A scary thought. Well, I'm proof that it is scary, but it can work. So I'm up for people messaging the D-Day Darlings. If you want to pop a message on the inbox, it'll get to me. I can provide some information privately as well. I've done that absolute loads throughout my whole sharing of my podcast and everything. So that doesn't stop. In fact, if anything, I'm going to ramp it up. So get in touch, guys. We're going to have a whole world of new babies. We love you lots, guys. Thank you so much for listening. And Emily's going to let us know what's coming next.
Next? Oh, well, we're really going to lighten the mood for the next week because we're doing a coronation special.
Ooh, rule Britannia.
Get out the flag, bake the cake, get that trestle table out because we're having a street party.
And plans that we've got for the D-Day Darlings, you know we've got a single coming out. Woo, woo, woo. A brand new tour, what that's all about and how we're all going to be celebrating this glorious moment of history. We love you guys. Keep it D-Day Darlings.
Bye-bye.
Ta-da, love.